Jordan, what's up? How's it going?
Rob, I've been diving. I've been hell diving.
I know. It was good to see you out there, finally. I've been doing tour after tour. And I'm traumatized for life now through this kind of epic battles that I've been involved in. I'm happy to see you as the fresh recruits joining the front. So it's good to have you out there. You got another hell diver coming on today, too. Yeah.
We do. We absolutely do. Mike from PA is joining us back after a long time. It was great to talk to him. It was a good episode. Covered the Super Tuesday primary results, John Fetterman's heel turns, and of course the state of the Biden administration. Really, really good conversation.
Yeah, and Mike thought that it was all going well. He's super, he loves Joe Biden. Fully in support of that. A PA guy, of course. Fetterman is his main man. And I think that's the main takeaway. If you don't get a chance to listen to the interview, that's the main takeaway.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine with us summarizing the conversation that way. But before we get to that, I want to remind folks, we talked to Matt Ford of the New Republic earlier this week for subscribers only. Sounds salacious, but you can become one. For just $5 a month, if you head on over to insurgentspod.com, you can subscribe. You get access to that episode and every bonus episode we've ever done and will do. You help keep the show going. We can't thank you enough for your support.
Yeah, absolutely, folks. If you can, please do subscribe. We were just talking about this in this conversation. We've been doing this show now 4 years. Like, I remember talking about the previous Super Tuesday. I couldn't go back to listen to that now, of course, because it would be so incredibly depressing. But we've been doing the show 4 years. I'm really proud of the coverage that we've done of the news and politics over that time. So many great conversations, so many great guests. And if you want to support that, we really do need all the help we can get to kind of continue doing this thing. So if you can, please subscribe over at insurgentspod.com to get access to all that bonus content and to support the work that we do here. And we really appreciate it a lot. You can become one of our beloved paid interns by subscribing to the podcast over at insurgentspod.com.
Yep. Yeah. Join the growing ranks of paid interns. You get access to the supply closet at Insurgents HQ, and
all kinds of cleaning products.
One seltzer a month.
Yeah, ice cold, refreshing. You save that up for a day when you know you're going to need it, and it just really, really hits.
Hits the spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, should we get a conversation with Mike?
Let's get into it. Mike from PA will be joining the show right after this. Where are we dropping? Where are we dropping, boys?
Mike, you were saying you were a Helldivers addict. Is that right?
Okay. I think you got to drop right on the secondary objective because we're going for a full clear.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the
move. Drop right into the shit.
Right into the shit.
Go somewhere kind of out of the way, but you check something off. Maybe get some nests or some automaton factories.
We're looking for the radar station because it reveals all the map. So that's the play. If you can find that early, go for that.
Are you robot war or bug war, Mike? Do you have a preference? I'm all about the automaton.
I'm a centrist on this. I want to kill them all.
Okay.
Just point me in a direction and
any threat to freedom and liberty and democracy. Freedom. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah. Rob, you were pushing me toward robot, but I still kind of like the bug war more. I think the Bile Titan is so much fun to to fight, but also the terrain, like the physical obstacles on the robot war, are so annoying. Like that cannon turret that just kind of like zeroes in on you, and out of nowhere you're just getting hit. Like that's very annoying.
Yeah.
They're very different play styles. You know, I could get in here. This, you want this to be a Helldivers 2 suggestion thing, because I do Helldives.
We got time.
Yeah. Which is the highest difficulty. No big deal. But yeah, did you guys, what do you, okay, in all seriousness, what do you guys think of the nerfs? Have you played since they nerfed things?
I think
it was
started
yesterday.
After they nerfed. Wait, I played today. What did they nerf?
They nerfed the shield. They nerfed the breaker shotgun. They nerfed the railgun.
Okay, I just started using the railgun, and it does already seem way less effective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The railgun used to be, you know, I'm going to keep going now.
Good.
You could strip the leg armor off of a charger in 2 charged shots and then shoot them in the leg and they would die. So you could basically, like, if you were decent at the game, you could easily control chargers with just, you know, the railgun and your primary weapon. And they were like, nope, we're going to make that a lot harder. So that's a shame.
That is.
Just unlocked the orbital laser last night.
Oh, that's fine.
And then... right before I went to bed, but then this morning on my bike ride, I have to do like remote play. I did a Bile Titan mission with some randos, and it's so satisfying to take one of those things out with the laser, and it makes it so much easier.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Once you get to like level 15, level 20, then the real game starts, you know, then you can start ramping it up to the high difficulty missions, and there's like 3 Bile Titans at once.
Yeah.
And that's when it's fun.
Yeah, Jordan, we've been able to squad up a few times, though. It's somewhat tricky to coordinate with the East Coast and West Coast time, because it gets to 11:30 midnight here. I'm a sleepy guy at
all
that time.
All time is time to dive.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird to be concerned about sleep when our boys are being taken apart in the Severance sector, and you're concerned I'm sorry, you're so fatigued. Yeah. I'm sorry, you didn't get your precious little 8 hours.
Just take a stim.
Yeah.
Well, I heard on my ship an advertisement that the bugs want to kill babies. And I was reminded, don't let the bugs kill babies. So, Rob, every moment you're asleep, innocent children are being killed by these bugs.
I heard the bugs beheaded a number of babies on one of those colonies out there. I've got reports of this, very credible. So we've just got
to annihilate their entire
species. Yeah.
Those damn socialist automatons.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Mike, we're happy to have you back after a couple fits and starts over the past several months.
it's been a minute, but I'm now a returning guest, and I know you said you were sending me something in the mail as a reward for that. I appreciate that. I'm going to display that prominently, the gift for returning.
Yep. It's oil. Yeah, Rob does oil paintings of every returning guest.
That's right.
Wow.
Our interns have assured me they've sent those off, so that should be in the mail, provided the interns have fulfilled their basic tasks on this.
What's the style? I feel like socialist realism is what you would go with.
That's right.
Would I be bestride of the working class, you know, the red book of Mike sayings, class in one hand, at AK-47 in the other?
You're up on like a cliffside like that, and then there's sort of a... there's a crowd beneath you, and at the back there's peasants, and like peasants, farmers, and then they kind of escalate, and then at the front are they like big burly soldiers. Yeah, so you see the sort of transformation. Yeah, so it's good. I think you're really going to enjoy that.
I'm going to put that as a mural on my living room wall. I'm going to take that and just do a huge, huge mural of myself. Would that be egomaniacal or no?
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
I would love to have a mural of myself like that on the wall.
Fiance grew up in Dallas, and she lived near Troy Aikman, and she told me that they would ride their bikes around the neighborhood as a kid, and he had this house with a huge open window above their door that you could see up the top of their staircase, which was directly in line with their front door. And at the top of the staircase, he had this colossal portrait of himself, and this entire family lived there, wife, kids. No, it's just him at the top of the stairs. And I think about that every time he calls a game. It's like, this guy loves himself. He might not know what day it is, but he loves himself.
Yeah.
I think it's probably just a reminder that it's his house.
Yeah. Yes.
You
this is where
I
live. Yeah.
Like after the CTE.
I'm this guy. That's me.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Well,
do you have anything else to chit chat about, or do we need to dive into the political realm?
You know, just I think it's always good to say that in the long run, your enemies will eventually make mistakes, you know, and so you just have to keep whatever motivates you to keep going is the important thing. Cleave to that, whether it's spite or it's hope, find something. And I've been operating with both. So it's been an enjoyable few months for me.
Is this a warning shot or is this a...
No. I think a lot of people talk to me about being depressed. I don't know if this ever happens to you guys, where people are like, I don't know how you pay attention to these things, or you have a, you know, it's so depressing out there. And so I'm just like, spite. Never got the bastards win.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in a weird way, I enjoy it. I think I'm just kind of sick for enjoying it. But nothing else really interests me because it doesn't have any real consequence or significance in the same way that this does, for better or for worse, often for worse. But
yeah,
I just I don't know. When I hear people say, "Oh, I just as soon as Biden," like you hear it a lot after Biden won, "Oh, I just stopped paying attention to the news." Why? Now's when you should. Like, you kind of have a mandate. Like, do something about it. It's such a strange reaction to me.
There's
I definitely
a lot of
like when
ways to go
when
with
Biden
that.
Won, I didn't check out of watching the news, obviously, because we talk about it all the time and everything. I did. I think that was probably the nail in the coffin of my belief in like the possibility of electoral politics
reform.
as a means of like transformative change. Like, I know there's things you can be accomplished with the electoralism, but I think seeing what happened to Jeremy Corbyn and then Bernie Sanders one after another in 2019 and 2020 was kind of just like, okay, well, that's we kind of need to start rethinking what we're doing here. But yeah, like you said, I don't think checking out of the news or just stopping paying attention to anything is the way to go about that. But it definitely was a radicalizing experience for me, and I started kind of looking beyond some of these ideas.
I think for me, some people look at the news as kind of like another entertainment vertical. You know, you have your sports, you have your pop culture, you have music, you have politics. It's just another category of like entertainment in a sense. And this is one of like if you watch a lot of cable news, that's the way it's presented. It's sort of like, you know, sports coverage, horse race. And for me, politics, and I think obviously for you guys and your audience, it's not about that. It's an ideological and it's a recognition of the impact of politics on our world. You know, Joe Biden winning means that we are going to go down a much darker path for a much longer period of time. And even if Bernie Sanders wouldn't have achieved a socialist utopia, he would have made a significant number of changes in policy. He would have had different personnel in positions. He would have appointed different people to different places, and it would have redounded in all sorts of myriad ways for a long, long time. And so, you know, if you believe in electoral reform, I'm sorry to say you're going to be waiting for the better part of a decade before major changes are really plausible, you know, and that's tough to hear for a lot of people because we don't live that long. So that's a big chunk of your adult life. You're going to be seeing this kind of neoliberal status quo grind on, and unless there's a rupture. But, you know, maybe we could talk about that later.
On the point about news as entertainment, I think you really saw them struggling in the primary. So up to this point, trying to create the impression that there was some sort of challenge on either side, more so on the right. But I mean, since 2-3 years ago, it was pretty clear this was Trump's nomination and it was his to give up if he wanted. And
the moment
they
he
were
didn't
still trying
concede,
to do.
It was his.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
so
like the
6th.
Moment like Trump came out and said it was stolen from me, I saw that, you know, and I don't mean to pat myself on the back, but as an internet commentator, it's required. I knew it was Trump's party right off the bat. I was like, oh, yeah, he's running again because this is the best strategy. Normally, when you lose an election, the presidential candidates kind of concede and they go away because they've been thoroughly rejected. So what's the argument in favor of them coming back? They're a loser. But with Trump, by denying he was a loser, he remained relevant and he remained in control of the Republican Party. And he, you know, gave him the opportunity to run again. There was this, you know, beyond the point of it being like, you know, an attack on our democracy, it was also a way of keeping the base behind him and not allowing them to shift to some other alternative. It was a strategic move on his part that worked perfectly. And it was clear that it was working almost within 2 weeks of January 6th, in my opinion.
That is, yeah, absolutely. There is, you know, it's locked up. It's Trump. It's Biden. But there is a challenger still remaining on the left. Jason Palmer, who cleaned up
Palmer Mania
Samoa.
Sweeping the nation.
He got his 40 votes, and that was seven delegates or whatever the fuck it was for the delegate per vote ratio for that American Samoa primary is incredible.
It's a two-person race now. It's Jason Palmer and Biden.
Yeah.
And listeners of the show know we've been talking about Palmer for a while now. He's one of our guys. We were often discussing the things that he does.
Oh my gosh.
And,
I mean,
and
like, listen to these guys. They are so prescient.
That's right. That's why people got to listen to this show.
Ad?
We push on that.
Did you see his ad where he was like, on the mainland, I'm very well known?
Yeah.
Are you? Such a great tactic.
Yeah.
Never heard of this guy.
That's like my amazing girlfriend lives in Canada of political advertisements.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's really
worked.
It worked. I mean, it worked really well, but I think it was also kind of a sign of, I don't mean to be to take your joke and make it too serious, but I think it is a sign of a profound weakness of the Biden campaign in the sense that they're not even doing the basics, which is like, let's look at all the delegate sources and let's put an intern on making sure we lock up all the delegates. You know, they can't even do that. They can't do anything right. They're fucking worthless, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into some more serious topics about where he's a major failure. But yeah, that to me, that's what it saw. Well, that was the side it said to me. It was that this nobody guy had an intern and he was able to win this primary and Joe Biden didn't even bother. And, you know, obviously he doesn't give a shit about the 50,000 people that live on America Samoa, right? And don't have citizenship and just have this weird nebulous status as American nationals but not American citizens, and how that might be problematic for a democracy. That's no thought from Joe Biden. He doesn't give a shit about those people.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't give a shit about that, and clearly they like, according to like the sort of language they've used, don't seem to care too much about this uncommitted campaign, which came together extremely quickly. I think for all the people that were trying to downplay this and kind of spin and saying Biden easily defeated uncommitted, which is hilarious because he's like the incumbent president defeating literally nobody. But this campaign did come together like really, really quickly, like, you know, over the span of a couple of weeks. And I'm just looking at the numbers right now from Super Tuesday. North Carolina got 85,000 votes, 12.6%. Minnesota got 40,000, 19.3%. Colorado got 36,000, 7.4%. You know, like, and there's a number of other states where, you know, had these kind of sizable chunks of the electorate taking time out of their day to go to the primary and vote uncommitted. And I think that's been the amazing thing for me just over the last like couple of months, them kind of refusing to even entertain any of that political pressure and really change their strategy in any way. They're still doing the hand-wringing rhetoric about Gaza and humanitarian aid and that kind of stuff at the same time, fully arming Israel, fully still 5 months into this thing, 6 months in, supporting their right to defend themselves. And then after the Super Tuesday ends, rather than kind of speaking to this glaring problem that they have clearly in all these states that they absolutely need to win in order to win the election, instead he reaches out to Nikki Haley voters. And it's like, please, we need Nikki Haley voters to come into our coalition. It's pretty amazing though that they've just completely mostly just ignored this like growing protest movement across all these really important states.
Well, before we get into Gaza, let me just say that, like, going back onto the uncommitted topic, the reality is that Joe Biden is a politician without a base. Nobody likes Joe Biden. There was recently a New York Times article trying to find people that like Joe Biden. And one of the like three people in the article, one was literally a lobbyist. There is no popular support. And the other people were just people that are 70 who watch MSNBC all day. You know, it's not he has nothing. He brings absolutely nothing to the table except the contempt and hatred of the next generation. The utter contempt for any kind of progressivism or policy or belief in the idea that we can handle these problems collectively. He is pr- probably the most depressing politician I've ever seen. Like, I was pretty actively involved in politics in the Democratic Party starting in 2013. And I remember Hillary Clinton had fans, you know, like, it wasn't me, but there were people that were excited for Hillary. There really were. There was a certain type of demographic that she appealed to, right? There is no Biden fans. There are no Biden supporters. There are no, it's people saying, well, you got to vote against Trump. And Biden is the president. So what are you going to do? Not vote for the president? Who else could run? That's the kind of answers you get. It isn't he's a great man and he's a great politician and he's a great campaigner. It's kind of default. And the point that I would make about that, and I wonder your guys' thoughts. The reason why Biden is the default is because he is a dam against a progressive movement within the Democratic Party that is on generational lines. And the only way to keep that held back is to have another decrepit 80-year-old man run. And the Democratic Party only wants to win as a neoliberal ideological party. They don't want to win as a progressive party. They would rather lose to Trump than even give gestures toward what is their base.
The book, The Truce, Hunter Walker and Lupe Lupin, it just came out a couple weeks ago. They talk about that specifically, Biden's maneuvering around that idea specifically. And there was a reported there was a call between Andrew Cuomo and Joe Biden early in 2020 when Cuomo was thinking about entering the race. Biden called him to dissuade him to say, don't run, don't jump in, because we'll split the vote. And as he phrased it, some lunatic will get the nomination, referring to Bernie, potentially Warren, but Warren didn't really have a shot. It was Bernie. And then, of course, as we all know, in the run-up to Super Tuesday, Obama worked behind the scenes to consolidate everyone else behind Biden,
yeah,
to block Bernie. So Biden, that was his objective. Obama, that was his objective. And of course, the party for the past few cycles, that's been their objective.
Say one thing? I want to share my personal animus for Barack Obama. And I feel like this needs to happen more on the left is Barack Obama is a disgusting individual and a horrifyingly evil man. The only time he's popped his head up is to do damage. The rest of the time he literally spends on billionaire yachts or in Martha's Vineyard or in his mega mansion.
Making movies now. He's a movie guy.
You know, as a second rate Netflix, then movies are a little bit too highbrow for him. That's too excellent for him.
He makes content.
He makes content like me and you. And he has nothing to say about a genocide going on. And I just want to point out this very clearly. This is not conspiracy. Israel interfered in the 2016 election and it was largely covered up. And
they interfered
with
every election.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I mean, like, even more actively. Like, when they were investigating Russia, they kept running into Israeli agents. They were like, ugh, stop showing the Israeli agents. We're looking for the Russian agents. And Netanyahu is, you know, personally snubbed, you know, Barack Obama. And even in this context, he's nowhere to be found. The man who was called a secret Muslim for the better part of a decade has no interest in putting his head up. Not even 1% of the man of Jimmy Carter, right? Just a total slug, a neoliberal slug. And his participation in the 2020 election being basically to commit a felony by promising, and I'm calling you a criminal, Obama, committing a felony by promising Pete Buttigieg a job in the administration in the 3 days between the South Carolina primary and the Super Tuesday. And we have this totally unqualified scumbag becomes our Department of Transportation secretary. And then that department leads to a cascading number of crises which affect the entire country, starting from the, you know, supply chain crisis, the price gouging by international shipping companies, the mass cancellations of flights, the failure with the derailments. Land, sea, and air, Pete Buttigieg has been a total and utter disaster as the Department of Transportation secretary. But he got that job as a bribe to endorse Biden and keep Bernie out. And so, yeah, I hate Obama, and it's very clear that he's damaging the country and refusing to even pick up the phone and say, Joe, you're not the man of the moment. Step down. You're going to lose to Trump. That's the only way he can redeem himself.
He's actively campaigning for Biden now. We talked about this on
make a
the
big
Super
difference.
Tuesday. Yeah, well, we talked about this on the Super Tuesday coverage on TYT this week, but there's a soiree, they call it, on March 28th at Radio City Music Hall. Obama, Clinton, and Biden are all appearing. Tickets start at $250, but if you want a picture with all three, it's $100,000. And then if you want to go to the private reception, it's $250,000 and up.
I guess we're just dispensing with campaign finance limits. Completely, you know, yeah. It used to be $2,800 per, you know, for the primary, $2,800 for the general. And if you have a wife or husband or marriage partner, then you could double it. But I guess we're just dispensing with all that now.
It's bullshit. It's just defying the spirit of the law when you're giving this money to like a supporting PAC doesn't coordinate with the candidate. It's just it's such a joke. Like, why even, like, at this point, why do we even have these guardrails if not just to keep lawyers employed?
Yeah, it's just to keep up the kind of like keep up the appearances of these institutions.
Yeah,
pretending they're not hopelessly corrupt.
Yeah, no, of course. They're all disgustingly corrupt. Well, can we take a moment to take a look at the complete collapse of the centrist wing, the people who, quote, blocked Build Back Better, the scapegoats, the villains, Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin. Their political careers are utterly annihilated. And that's the strategy that Joe Biden is copying.
Yeah.
Isn't that incredible? Though.
Gottheimer still somehow thriving in the Democratic Party, despite like almost single-handedly trying to derail it in the House. He never got the flack that he deserved.
Because Joe Biden doesn't want to give him flack.
Well, he's also, because he runs a pack with Akeem Jeffries to beat progressives. So it's like, you can derail our signature legislative priority as long as you help us beat the Justice Democrats.
Well, I mean, just look at New York State. Like, they can't gerrymander their state. Meanwhile, the Republicans gerrymander the fuck out of, Ohio, Florida, Texas. You know, Ohio has a nonpartisan redistricting law. They just ignore their law and gerrymander the hell out of it. And the New York State Democrats don't even want to have extra Democratic reps. They're protecting Republicans. They're increasing the number of Republicans. The California Democrats have a supermajority. They have a fair districting commission. On net, California and New York probably could have another 15 Dems if they gerrymandered, but they don't, because they don't really give a shit about beating the Republicans. It's more about controlling the Democrats, controlling progressives, the left, etc.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most amazing things that we started doing this podcast like immediately after, right after the first Iowa primary in 2020. It's kind of amazing that we've been doing that long, actually.
Congrats, guys.
But just following it all this time and the kind of skepticism that we talked about Biden and that I think everyone had, and the way that was kind of the main thing, as much as they're trying to tout his accomplishments, like he's been this like historic figure, failing to pass his like signature piece of legislation and really not making any effort to bring any of these people in his own party online who are there to stop it and to like not even ever really mentioning Manchin and not even really like taking it to them at all and not really fighting. This was the guy, his whole pitch was like, I'm going to reach across the aisle. I'm going to bring people together. And meanwhile, people in his own party destroy his own agenda, which would have genuinely been quite transformative. Like I would have been pretty shocked and surprised. And I would have had to kind of like admit being totally wrong about that if he had actually passed that. But zero effort to really like bring anyone in line in his own party that was blocking that. And then this is what they're going to try and sell to people, in addition to overseeing a genocide at the same time.
Now, I don't want to say great man of history too much, but I do think it is important to underline that Joe Biden is profoundly one of the most incompetent presidents we've ever had as being president. And you can kind of see it. This is what links domestic with foreign policy, because his inability to pressure Sinema and Manchin is the same inability to pressure Netanyahu. Even though he has complete leverage over all these people, he can't ever deploy it in a positive direction. So, you know, for example, Josh Paul, who is the State Department official who resigned back in October when we were transferring weapons to Israel, he talked about how it's federally illegal to give weapons to a country that's blocking U.S. humanitarian aid. So Joe Biden is already flagrantly violating federal law to give Israel these weapons. And it's black and white, clear as crystal. And yet this doesn't seem to even be mentioned in any kind of media. Nobody seems to care because laws are not real. And it's about power. And so the people in power want Israel to get those weapons. So they don't give a shit what the laws say. And there's no pressure to change Biden on that. And similarly, Biden, you know, he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth. On the one hand, he really wants humanitarian aid to flow into Gaza, but he's incapable of pressuring Israel, which depends 100% on American shipments of arms in order to complete it. Similarly, Kyrsten Sinema is not senator in Arizona without the Democratic Party. So instead of Joe Biden exercising even one ounce of threat to her during her, you know, when it would matter, when he had control of all three branches, he sits by and lets them dictate policy and we get nothing. And he's a failure. You know, I think a lot of people are in this 2021 mindset where they saw the possibilities. You know, Bernie Sanders put out that big Build Back Better program and it had a bunch of really great things. And there was like 10 pieces of legislation that would have been truly positive. None of them passed. Okay, like he didn't very little as a president. He doesn't have much. And if you know, somebody's listening to this, pulling up a list of accomplishments on their notes app on their phone, almost every single one of those things is tiny and incremental. You know, from climate change to, you know, the CHIPS Act, all of that is relatively small and minor and not enough to address any of those issues. Or the gun control without any gun control law, like that. There he has nothing. And I'm sorry if I'm coming across harsh against the Democratic Party, but the reality is that we are down in a hole and I don't see a way to climb out of it unless we can be honest first.
One of the other characters that is drawing a lot of scorn, and I think rightfully so, is John Fetterman. Now, Mike, you
oh my God.
Have been following Fetterman for while now.
If you want to know why I'm mad lately.
Yeah. Of course, everyone's aware of his, I guess, reveling in Israel's ongoing attacks on Gaza, waving the Israeli flag, taunting protesters, tweeting out just a bunch of insipid bullshit.
He's doing memes about, like, you know,
genocide.
Genocide. Like, this little kids are being murdered by the tens of thousands and starving to death intentionally with his full support.
Right. And now
sick person.
He is getting flack for pooling his support for funding for an LGBTQ center in Pennsylvania and then saying, oh, well, my staff did that. And
I thought he flipped again. I thought he was pulling it. Then he blamed his staff, but then he decided to pull it. I thought he flipped again, but maybe I'm wrong.
It's still kind of the same position. He's pulling support. He said his staff did it, and then he's saying his staff did it because they're going to put it in the fiscal year 25 budget bill.
So,
and try
can
to
I
do
ask
it that
a question?
Way.
Why did this center suddenly get attention? What was the impetus for this even becoming aware?
If only there was, you know, some big social media account known for singling these types of facilities out. Maybe that could be it. Maybe it was
lit. Was,
you know,
was is John Fetterman taking political advice from libs of TikTok? Is that what I'm hearing? So John Fetterman is a really interesting case because, you know, listen, I don't want people to think I'm completely unhinged, but you're really touching all of my pain points that really make me furious, near apoplectic, to be honest. So John Fetterman, I've known him for a very long time, and his wife. I was even a body man for his wife to some, ironically enough, Syrian American dinner. And I have been kind of, I was very pro Fetterman. Then I started to get a little bit nervous. He got rejected from a DSA endorsement in Pittsburgh for a Senate. Was it for lieutenant governor? Can't remember. But that was kind of the beginning of his. Starting to shift further and further to the
heel
right.
Turn.
His heel turned. So in 2018, he was without a doubt a lefty. Medicare for all. He took Bernie Sanders' personal endorsement to challenge an incumbent Democratic lieutenant governor from the left. He won based on that, throwing this guy out of office in the middle while the governor, Tom Wolf, was reelected. So John Fetterman replaced an incumbent because Pennsylvania has this weird thing where the primary determines lieutenant governor. It's not a running mate. It's like the lieutenant governor gets picked in the primary, then it's the running mate for the governor. And so and I was part of that. You know, he also helped me in other legislative campaigns at the state level of Pennsylvania, including helping get money and support for a Medicare for all. He wanted to do single payer in Pennsylvania state senator candidate. And so I knew this guy, you know, from May, way back in those years. So I was, you know, I said, hey, okay, he's running for Senate. He's getting a little bit quiet on some things. I'm willing to let it go because the alternative is Connor Lamb, who is, you know, basically Joe Manchin Jr. And I don't want to say I blame the stroke, but I would say the stroke, which was on election day, primary election day, there has been a substantial change. And he's continued to go further and further to the right. He used to do this kind of annoying, pestering shit, but towards conservatives, right? He would talk about how he wants to legalize weed and magic mushrooms. He would run around with a trans flag, not an Israeli flag. So he's doing all this stuff that he used to do to pester the right. He's now turned it toward the people that got him there, his base, the progressives and the left that got him a political career in the first place. You know, and this is a guy who used to, you know, march in Black Lives Matter protests against and confront cops. You know, this is somebody who, you know, his wife ran a free store. So to say this is a heel turn, this is a complete and utter betrayal. This is not just some lib being lib. This is somebody who got where he is because of people like you and me. And he's turning that at all those years of effort to support a genocide. And then tweak our noses about it. I think John Fetterman is probably one of the most depraved human beings on the planet Earth right now. And I mean that completely.
I think it's probably part of, I think the stroke is partially to blame. Because it also has led to him saying things in interviews that his staff had to walk back or justify or double down on. But I also think the part of the blame lies with Adam Gentleson, who is his chief of staff. And
oh,
that
yeah.
He's a former chief of staff to Harry Reid, part of the Reid machine. He's a longtime, you know, Dem leadership staffer in the Senate. And I think this direction that Fetterman is heading in is because of him, because this is just how to preserve your position in the Senate, how to be a good Democrat. And also the tactics, the in-your-face stuff, it's a mix of the campaigning that they did, the memeing and the viral tweets and all that kind of stuff, with the toxic old school Democratic politics. And this is what it looks like.
If you go back and you look at some of his campaign ads, like on immigration, John Fetterman ran as an open borders progressive. You know, he basically had commercials with people spreading out prayer rugs, Muslim prayer rugs, and talking about how immigrants enhance our country and shit like that. And now he's supporting basically Joe Biden's adoption of Donald Trump's immigration policy, which is what a three-dimensional chess move that is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You want to build
the wall. Them.
Donald Trump can't even build the wall. Joe Biden can. Donald Trump didn't even give the Border Patrol Gestapo powers. Joe Biden did. You know, like.
That's called doing politics, baby.
I mean, politics is harm reduction. Harm reduction is when you adopt the program of your entire opponent.
You trick them by adopting all their policies. That's right. Yeah.
Like earlier
this year. And
then you
expose their hypocrisy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I think that, you know, I have a lot of anger and hatred for these people because I know they know better because I've talked to them personally. So when they're doing this, they're doing it for Machiavellian sociopathic reasons. This isn't confusion. This isn't lack of knowledge. This is an evil son of a bitch. And there's really nothing short other than he's an opportunist. He's a fraud. Everything he says is a lie. It's for his own advancement only. Gendelson may be true, but, and his wife basically disappeared off social media after being basically his campaign surrogate, primary campaign surrogate. It's an incredible shift. And you know, I got fooled. I think that I should take the blame on that partially. I think that I tried my best. I did, when somebody betrays you, there's always warning signs, right? Like, you know, when their Israel plank wasn't very big. It wasn't a topical issue, but it was there. It was reported.
He was always kind of like a progressive except for Palestine.
There's no type. Such thing. But yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Progressive except for Palestine is not real. If anybody who is that is not progressive or left. Yeah. In any
way. I think that's like a good indication that someone is going to betray their values when they have this kind of stance. And you can say that about a lot of people, especially in the Democratic Party, but a lot of like liberal progressives across Canada and the UK and the United States.
Yeah. There's a blatant genocide going on, and the enemies of liberals now are Amnesty International, the United Nations, Doctors Without Borders. Do you listen to yourself? Do you hear these words coming out of my mouth?
Yeah.
This is real. You know, I'm sure you guys talk about Gaza every fucking show now, but
yeah.
You know, for me, it's a moment of like, if these people would murder these babies, you don't think they would do the same to you? Like, what saves you from this level of repression? Because you're an American? Like, what's the protection here? If they're willing to murder these children live on everyone's social media, there's no limits to what they will do. So just keep that in mind, that these people are not your friends. They will betray you as well.
Well, and this is like you touched on this earlier. This is something that I found really like unbelievable about this whole situation. Like you talked about Obama, and similarly to every other Democratic president, every other president, they also gave Israel whatever they wanted throughout Obama's tenure. I think signing a record level of funding over a decade with like on their way out. At the same time, there was clearly some kind of animosity there with the Israeli government and the Obama administration, even while giving them everything they wanted. I know, especially towards the end of the administration, you saw like John Kerry and some other figures that were in the administration starting to criticize Israel a little bit more, talking about the settlements, talking about, you know, the illegality and the criminality of the settlement project. And then you have Israel kind of fully supporting Trump over the next couple of years as Trump gives them also everything that they wanted. And now you have the kind of the same thing here where you have Biden also just fully supporting, fully subsidizing this genocide. You have his underlings and his PR people, you know, out there giving these press conferences every day, trying to kind of like obfuscate that and trying to talk about how concerned they are and all the concern conversations and difficult conversations they're having and all this kind of stuff, while simultaneously giving them everything they want. But I think that's the incredible thing, though, is that Israel doesn't even seem to really respect Biden or anyone in the Democratic Party. Like, that's the bizarre thing. It's like it's not reciprocated. They don't seem to appreciate anyone in the Democrats. It seems like obvious from the perspective of people in the Israeli government, they would much rather have Trump back. They actively interfered to elect Trump in the first place. And despite this like total level of like this complete lack of respect, you still see Biden and Democrats just like giving them whatever they want. And I think that's part of the only reason people wonder like what's the strategy? Are they getting confused or whatever? But no, it's just because Biden is a Zionist. He believes in this and he believes in their project and he fully supports them even when they don't even seem to really like him or have any respect for what their administration is telling them.
You know, I don't want to do too much psychoanalyzing here, but I think what you're describing is a phenomenon of historical blindness. So when you're Joe Biden, you came in most of your early career when your brain was functioning and those deep core memories were setting. There was a liberal Zionism. There was kind of an idea of having some sort of negotiated two-state settlement and a recognition of Israel in the Arab world and, you know, a kind of final settlement, maybe not a right of return for Palestinians, but kind of some sort of negotiation was possible. Those people were murdered by Benjamin Netanyahu. Those Israeli leaders were shot in the street, down in cold blood. Okay? There is no liberal Zionism anymore. But the Democratic Party and J Street and these kind of organizations pretend that there is. But in Israel today, there is no left. It is a hyper-conservative party versus fascists. That's it. There is no liberal Zionism. There is no socialist movement. It is these people want to exterminate and displace. They want to solve what they call the Palestinian question. And I know that many of you who know your Holocaust history know that it was called the Jewish question. And they had very similar solutions that the Israeli far right has for, you know, that the Nazis had, and this is reality. This is historical fact. They want to, you know, they went around talking about permanently displacing the population of Arabs out, you know, Palestinian Arabs out of Gaza. And they built their, they've built a large concentration camp on the Egyptian side of the Gazan border already. The IMF just the other day released a supplemental loans to Egypt, who was, which is suffering a huge financial crisis because the Houthi attacks have been so effective that the transit of the Suez Canal has dropped by 50%, which is a major source of dollars for Egypt's government, which is a military dictatorship that's allied with the United States. You know, all the autocracies surrounding Egypt are all U.S. aligned except Syria. And so we have this kind of context of Joe Biden is operating as if a thing, liberal Zionism, exists that does not exist. We have a fascist government in Israel that is intending to commit genocide and ethnic displacement, a combination of genocide where practicable and apartheid when not. And that's the solution. That's the program they're going to do, is what can we do to displace, reduce the Palestinian population, displace them, and when we can't, use apartheid enforcement. And that's what the United States of America is 100% firmly behind. And so, you know, what accounts for that? I think it's the incuriousness of the American people, to be honest. It is a corporate media that is completely controlled by Zionists aligned figures, like the New York Times totally fabricated story about mass rapes that has been exposed. The fact that CNN has a conflict with Christiane Amanpour about their totally biased pro-Israel slant. You have AIPAC pouring $100 million into Democratic primaries, mostly funded by Republican billionaires who are trying to eliminate anybody who has any kind of objection to Israeli genocide. So it's a pretty dire circumstance. And,
oh, well, let's talk about, you know, that real quick.
Sorry about the long rant, but I think it's all linked and it's all important.
Yeah, it is. It is. But on the AIPAC front, one of the races I was watching on Tuesday was California's 47th, because that David Weigel did a really good piece in Semaphore about how that's the first shot in this battle between AIPAC and progressives. But here's the thing. The guy they were targeting and trying to stop isn't a progressive. They were upset that he took a endorsement from J Street, which isn't even like a radical organization and probably aligns with a vast majority of what AIPAC believes. It's just that he wasn't unilaterally behind AIPAC. So they spent almost $5 million to stop this candidate, Dave Min, in favor of Joanna Weiss. $5 million in this primary to... Oh, this is also Katie Porter's seat. It's to fill Katie Porter's
seat. Can I say one thing about this number, $5 million? Congressional races, like swing congressional seats, like top races, used to spend, you know, $1.5 million total. The amount of money that's now flowing to congressional seats is totally incomprehensible. I don't even know what the, like, I think we're running up to the borders of what even these ad spends can even do anymore. You know, you could only change so many people's minds, I guess, with lies. And it seems like it didn't work, but
it did not work. Yeah. Dave Min still won, but they spent most of that money on mailers telling everyone in that district that he got a DUI in 2023. That was their big attack on him. He hasn't called for a ceasefire. He hasn't really done anything that should upset most of the pro-Israel groups. But because he took the endorsement for J Street, they spent $5 million and just burned through it because Joanna Weiss fell short by around 7,000 votes.
Incredible.
So now it goes to, you know, a head-to-head against a Republican. Who knows who might win that? And who knows where AIPAC might go with their money in the general? They might support the Republican. Because these people don't really care about anything here or democratic principles here. They'll happily support some MAGA candidate or whomever, as long as that person supports Israel.
I mean, it's incredible how, like, there's really, like, no level of criticism that they'll accept. Like, you can't be pro-Israel and have a mild criticism. What they seem to want is people that are just 100% in lockstep with their project, and they'll go all in to try and eliminate anyone that's not having that, even if they're Israel supporters. Like, it's actually crazy.
I would say, like, It's important to understand that the way Israel is functioning in the Western world right now is as a proliferator of fascist politics. And it's happening in, and their main vector of doing it is by disarming and defeating kind of center left progressivism. And so they see center left progressivism anywhere, not even socialism, the center left progressivism anywhere in the Western world as a threat. And they do that by primarily going after parties like, you know, the Labour Party in the UK, the Democratic Party of the United States, going after, you know, Lula in Brazil, going after AMLO in Mexico, going after, you know, Podemos in Spain. Like, it's all the same. Like, pretty much any place that you have any kind of even kind of milquetoast social democracy party, they're trying to inculcate that with a virulent pro-Zionism. And they're using, is, you know, money from, you know, pro-Zionist billionaires, mostly on the right. And, you know, you could see that. And it began with America, actually, and Jeremy Corbyn. With in America in 2020 in Iowa, DMFI did a big ad spend against Bernie Sanders because he had a heart attack. If you remember during the 2020 primary early, he had that heart attack. And they spent a lot of money saying, I don't know about his heart attack. I don't know if he could beat Trump. You know, and that was their argument. It was, and it's important to understand that these Zionists have never spent money talking about Israel, but talking about the Israeli issues, which I would object to, but at least I would understand, hey, that's your policy. You're presenting your viewpoint. I'm going to disagree with it virulently, but at least you're open about who you are. What they do is they try to find any kind of negative attack ad they can use against you and just go after you by amplifying a negative attacks. And so they're not honest about why they're making those negative attacks. They're making those negative attacks because of your Israeli policy. And the only people who understand that are the politicians. And that's the chilling effect. The chilling effect is if you oppose Israel, they're going to find whatever is the worst fact about you or make one up and spread it to your entire community at max volume. And that intimidates people.
It's just also funny that, like, given the whole, like, Biden-Trump matchup that's shaping up now, and like you, like we were talking about, Biden doesn't have a whole lot of things that he can actually run on. So what they're running on is Trump bad, and this is about saving democracy. It's about whether you want democracy or tyranny. These are the options that are on the ballot. But it's like, yeah, like what we're describing, this democracy where if you want to run for political office, you need to have such an astronomical amount of money to combat the gun nation of genocidal lunatics that are going to dump in millions of dollars to try and destroy you if you don't completely go in lockstep with their psychotic settler colonial project of mass murder and displacement and genocide. Yeah, there's a really, democratic system here. We got to vote for Joe Brandon to ensure that this beautiful, vibrant democracy, this shining beacon for the rest of the world, is able to persevere for another 4 years. It's like, come on, guys. It's over. It's over.
I think one of the things to point out is, like, there was a real concerted effort. We talked about the primary at the beginning, and I've been formulating thoughts on it as we've been talking. And it's like, on the left, there was a concerted effort to ignore the uncommitted campaign. Not to say it doesn't matter. Just ignore it completely. Don't even talk about it at all. And on the Republican side, there was a concerted effort to create the idea that there was a Nikki Haley anti-Trump wing of the Republican Party. And if you actually
those
go
moderate
and look,
Republicans, any day now, they're going to rise up, the silent majority.
Yeah, the anti-Trump Republicans. And this is why Joe Biden needs to go to the right, because look at all those anti-Trump Republicans that are waiting to be picked up. And the thing is, we have this thing called scientific polling. And the reality is if you go and look at the exit polling, people who voted for Nikki Haley are Democrats who watch MSNBC and are in open primary states, and they went to do Operation Chaos and register their anti-Trumpism. They're not Republicans who were going to vote for a Republican who would just hate Trump and are pick-upable. They are already Biden supporters when you do the general election poll, Biden versus Trump. And the results are there are not enough of them. Donald Trump is winning because Joe Biden is profoundly hated. He's more hated than Trump. That is a fact. and he's unpopular and he's despised and he's losing big among, you know, everybody who isn't a certain type of effete upper middle class white liberal. Okay. It's a big problem. And, you know, some of these people, I guess, would vote for a Democratic politician, but many of them wouldn't. And so, you know, there's been this entire industry, especially on mainstream media like CNN and MSNBC, of cooking up this Haley anti-Trump movement, which is absolutely non-existent. It's like going after the Jeb Bush voters as a strategy. We saw how well that worked in 2016.
Well, there's plenty more to be said. There's plenty more that you will also cover on your show.
Oh, yeah.
Where can people tune in and listen to you, subscribe, and support your work?
If you enjoy someone being very angry like I was on this podcast, the twitch.tv/central_, which is very important, committee, where we cover the growing Chinese century. I can't wait. President Xi, liberate us.
Absolutely.
If you could airdrop anti-aircraft missiles on my house, I will put them in my garage and wait for your call.
But I was just hoping they could help us build some high speed rail, but that too would be good, I guess.
Well, first we need the anti-aircraft missiles, then we could do the high speed rail. Okay. That's stage two.
Good.
But no, in all seriousness, if you want a democratic socialist perspective on my stream, central_committee, we talk about news and politics every day from 10 a.m. Eastern to 3 p.m. Monday to Friday. And we just recently had Ryan Grimm on. We had the two national co-chairs of the DSA on. We're constantly having journalists and, you know, socialist politicians and organizers on the program. And, you know, of course, just my daily rants about the news of the day. So that sounds like something you would want to do. Central_committee at twitch.tv.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me, and I hope I can come on again soon.
Absolutely.
All right.